Welcome to In the Studio with a 21st Century Perspective on History's Greatest Rock Bands.
Guitar up.
One, two, three.
I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, one of the longest-running recording and touring bands ever answers the inevitable musical question, now what? Smoke on the
water. And it was actually, the whole thing was recorded under dire circumstances. It was very cold, and we were in this corridor. It's beyond belief, actually, the desperation with which we were trying to finish this record. A lot of Machine Head, a lot of that was written on the spot.
The reunion album was just that. It was a reenactment, if you like, of Deep Purple in Rock. Although I don't think it's as good an album as Deep Purple in Rock, but it's got a couple of really good songs on it. Perfect Strangers and Knocking at Your Back Door. To me, the record hangs on those two.
Hello, I'm Roger Glover of Deep Purple, and I am in the studio talking to Redbeard. Gonna be hell. Hell to pay. It's gonna be hell. Okay, Redbeard, now what?
Now that's a very good question to pose by a band that has been a juggernaut of hard rock since 1968. Along with Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath, Deep Purple is part of the holy trinity of British hard rock, without whom multiple generations of heavy metal bands simply would have no template. Were it not for the superhuman Rolling Stones, Deep Purple would be the longest-running recording and touring rock band in the world. The Mark II lineup of lead singer-songwriter Ian Gillan, organ maestro John Lord, bass player-songwriter Roger Glover, drummer Ian Paice, and lead guitarist Ritchie Blackmore changed the course of rock history. Between 1970 and 1975, with the albums Deep Purple in Rock, Fireball, Machine Head, Made in Japan, and Who Do We Think We Are, establishing Deep Purple as a world-class favorite that, to this day, remains true. Gillan, Glover, and Paice are the sturdy triumvirate that continue the legacy to this very day, augmented impressively by ex-Rainbow and Ozzy Osbourne band keyboard player Don Airey and Dixie Dregs and Kansas band guitarist extraordinaire Steve Morse. That Deep Purple in 2013 asked the inevitable musical question of itself, now what? Admittedly so publicly, is not nearly as remarkable as the fact that the band answered it so emphatically with their impressive new album. Here's Deep Purple bass player, songwriter Roger Glover with me in the studio.
I suppose the object of the exercise is not to become a parody of yourself. And that does require change, you know, people are scared of change, you know, including us in a way. But you have to embrace it when it comes. When Steve Morse joined the band nearly 20 years ago, we reinvented the band then, basically, with Perpendicular. Because, you know, with someone like Ritchie leaving, if you replaced him with someone that looked like him and played like him and, you know, heaven forbid, behaved like him, as great as he was, it would have been kind of second rate somehow. And when Steve joined the band, he asked me, he said, what do you want from me? I said, I want you to be 100% yourself. You can't be in a band unless you're really you. You can't pretend to be someone else. He said, can I play anything I feel like? And I said, yeah. I mean, there's no formula for what a Deep Purple song is. A Deep Purple song is whatever we write and whatever we record. And so with Perpendicular, he branched out. And we did some pretty different things on that. And, you know, he's certainly grown with the band, of course. And I think it's very important with this band that the guitar and the keyboard have to be kind of twin pillars of virtuosity. because that's our history. That's what we are. We're not a three chord blast 'em out power band. We're more of an intricate musicians band. And I suppose, you know, some people have said that this record has got a bit of prog in it. And maybe that's true. I don't know. It certainly wasn't. We didn't think of things like that. It's just that when you've got musicians like that around, it's very difficult to hold them back. Richie said once that Pete Townsend told him, never get ahead of your audience. You know, you can play fantastic stuff, but if your audience isn't with you on it, then it's kind of meaningless. And there's been a desire in the band to return to a sort of a more simple thing. You know, we write a lot of complicated riffs, and a lot of the stuff we write doesn't quite work on stage, or it doesn't quite satisfy for some reason. Not all of it. I mean, just every now and again that happens. And just the feeling of the things that people recognize most, obviously from the 70s, the, you know, the Smokes and the Black Knights and so on, which are very simple riffs. And what's the complicated part is what goes over it, but the basis of it is simple. And so there was a desire to kind of return to that a little. In fact, that's what inspired the first song on the album, A Simple Song.
You lie on the bed you made.
The dynamic, simple song leads off the new Deep Purple album Now What, with the light and shade hallmarks of the band over the years, with the prodigious pipes of Deep Purple lead singer Ian Gillan in fine form. Here's Roger Glover.
Now, I think Ian's found his new voice. You know, he's not 24 anymore, which is when we wrote most of those earlier songs. And he's had to accommodate his voice with his age. And so we were very careful about where we placed songs and the keys they were in and so on. And I think on this album, he doesn't sound like he's straining at all. I think he's very, very comfortable. And he really enjoyed singing it. What you need is a theme for a song, and then lyrics come. But Ian and I have a lot of fun with lyrics. We don't write lyrics that are necessarily that mean in one particular thing, although in our minds they may one thing. But it's nice to have the ability that people can actually make up their own meanings and what's personal to their lives and how they see it. And I think that way songs reach out and touch people. Our songs come from life. A simple song, it's kind of, I suppose, vaguely I was thinking about the band, Deep Purple, the history of the band. You know, we've been through a lot of ups and downs, and it's a bit like a soap opera over 40 years or so, with comings, goings, leavings, sackings, firings, reunions, you know. And but, you know, there it is. That's if you look at anyone's life over 40 years, you're going to find a lot of ups and downs anyway. So it's, when you do it in a band, there's five of us doing it together or more as people leave and come and go. It starts off very simple. You know, music grabs you and you just want to be part of it. And then all of a sudden it becomes a business and it gets complicated. And then you find out you need lawyers and attorneys and all kinds of, it gets complicated. And it's destructive in a way. It's the object of the exercise is to hang on to the fun that you first had when you start. And I think we all actually are in love with playing music together. Every night on stage is a joy. Simple Song was one of my ideas I came in with, and it sort of hung around for quite a while and didn't inspire too much. And I was thinking, oh, maybe I should just drop it. But we worked on it, and in fact, it came out as a real surprise. It surprised us. That and Weirdistan. Ian Gillan was saying fairly early on, after we're doing the mixes, he said, I think the album should open with A Simple Song. Because A Simple Song and A Weirdistan kind of sum up what the rest of the album is all about, which is diversity.
We travel through time and meet on a stretch of sand. Where you're from up north and I live in Wonderland.
In the dark, we cross the border, all those people.
Like a stranger in a strange land, Deep Purple reporting back from Weirdistan on their new album, Now What? Before this new album was even released, the reports that highly esteemed veteran producer Bob Ezrin was working with Deep Purple stopped many rock music observers in their tracks. Roger Glover tells how the Pink Floyd and Alice Cooper veteran Ezrin came into the Deep Purple camp.
When we met Bob Ezrin, he came to see us just over a year ago in Toronto. And we had a meeting with him the next day. And he said some very astute things and impressed us with his knowledge and his vision. And he asked us all, you know, what we wanted from out of it as well, which was very nice. And we had basically we liked him very much and he liked us. And he said, what I saw on stage last night, he said, that's what people want. He said, you're not going to get, you know, one big hit single, on the radio. That's, those days are gone. You got to do what you do well and stretch out. And those words, stretch out, you just mentioned it. They lived with us. And when we went to the next writing session, well, I remember we're talking, what does he mean by stretch out? Does he mean make it longer? Or does he mean stretch out like a bit more, boundary crossing? Let's be a bit more adventurous. And whatever it was, I think we took it on board. And that writing session was very productive. And also this idea that we had, we just wanted to be very strong and simple and most of all sound good. And I think, with Bob's help, we've got that, this record. The idea of whether or not we should even do another album came into discussion probably 4 or 5 years ago. And we're so busy touring. We're a touring band. We're on the road constantly. The world is a big place and we're lucky enough to have an audience everywhere we go. And so there wasn't a pressing urgency to do an album. And doing an album, business-wise, is not a great prospect these days. Sometimes, more than often, you don't recoup the costs because they don't sell anymore. It's a different world. So the idea of, taking your precious time when you're not on the road to actually go back out with the band and have a writing session or make a record, it was a tough sell on the band. And some people thought that we shouldn't do an album. We should just do the odd single or the EP or something like that once in a while. But to my view, we're an album band, and whether it's old-fashioned or not, I don't care about that. An album is a kind of, I'm sure lots of people said it before, it's a snapshot of the state of the union at that point in the band. And every album tells a story, and for our fans, and certainly for us, that's important. You say more in an album than you can on a single. We started thinking about it, so we better do something. We didn't know who, where, when, what. But we had a writing session. We kind of forced ourselves into a writing session about 2 years ago in Spain in a small studio up in the mountains and just spent, I think it was 9 days, just jamming, just grabbing ideas and seeing where they led to. And then we were back on tour. And we've done some wonderful tours in the last few years. We did an orchestral tour a couple of years ago that was just superb. It wasn't the normal kind of orchestral tour. It was an orchestra being part of the band. So it was actually like a 45-piece band. And they were great. They're very, very good players, rock and rollers. So it wasn't the usual, pastoral, laid-back feel from an orchestra. They were right into it. It was more like jazz than classical. And that was a killer tour. And I think a lot of the influence for Now What came from that tour, using an orchestra not as a backing or as a sugary kind of sweetening behind everything, but to really make it part of the band. And I hear that. It wasn't a conscious thing, but I hear it. Listening to the record now, I can hear it. We'll be right back.
heaviness of Deep Purple's Out of Hand from the new album Now What, with a hint of Middle Eastern melody, makes this song the Kashmir of 2013. When Roger Glover of Deep Purple returns, you'll find out how and why the collapse of the 20th century music business was barely a speed bump in the road of this internationally in-demand band. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, follow me at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and hear all of your favorite rocker interviews at inthestudio.net.
Hi, I'm Roger Glover of Deep Purple, in the studio. Okay, Redbeard, now what?
Thanks, Roger. You and Deep Purple answered that musical question unequivocally and unambiguously on this new album. The first rock musician to come to mind who could sustain years of big arena touring without a new album was Elvis Presley, followed in the first half of the 80s by the Grateful Dead. But these were clearly the exceptions. But Deep Purple has not simply survived, but prospered over the last 7 years, touring the world repeatedly with a slew of compilations and DVD releases, but no new album until now, in complete defiance of the implosion of the 20th century music business model. Here's Deep Purple's Roger Glover in the studio.
I know exactly what you mean. I was watching Joe Walsh doing an interview the other day where he describes what's happened to the music business. It's all gone. It's finished. It's all gone. But, you know, he's right. It's a whole different world. There's so much choice. There's so many different genres, you know, you're not sure if it's killer metal or death metal or reggae metal, you know. And I think that kind of divides things. It divides people. You know, music used to be just music. It doesn't play as big a part in people's lives as it used to. It's now a kind of background to their lives, as opposed to what it was, which is, you know, almost like a semi-religion, because there was no internet, no computers, no games, that kind of thing. It was music or sport. Well, I remember falling so much in love with music at that point. Lonnie Donegan started it all, and the energy that Skiffle had was inspiring. After all the sort of post-war ballads and kind of pseudo New Orleans jazz, the big jazz bands, you know, Kenny Ball and stuff. And all of a sudden, you got this really raw, homemade music, homemade instruments, and people getting involved. And a band consisted of, you know, not just two or three people or four people, but, you know, eight or nine people, all hammering away on a ukulele or a tambourine or a shaker or a washboard. It was stunning. And right on the heels of that came Bill Haley and very quickly Elvis Presley and Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis, Chuck Berry. I mean, just, man, it was a magic time. And I could live for nothing other than that. And I had to be in a band, because that's the only way I could sort of touch it somehow and be a part of it. And that, as Pacey said, you know, when you're on stage and you're playing, no matter what age you are, you're still in touch with that 15-year-old kid that you used to be. It's the same feeling.
Be
Lots of Deep Purple musical hallmarks on the song Hell to Pay, including Ian Gillan's storytelling, keyboard player Don Airey, a dead ringer for the late John Lord on organ, and guitarist Steve Morse putting on a clinic with that guitar solo. But Roger Glover doubts that you'll see Deep Purple saluted on TV's American Idol or The Voice.
Of course, there are the diehards, and you know, for them, that's why we do an album. It's the real fans, the fans that really do listen to music. Of course, there are music lovers out there. I'm talking about the mainstream pop radio TV kind of thing, where you don't hear hard rock or heavy metal or stuff. You know, they don't touch it with a barge pole. It's a bit like what the late 60s, you know, hard rock couldn't get played on the BBC, so you didn't stand a chance of having a hit record if you played hard rock, which is why we played hard rock, because we thought, well, fuck, you know, we're going to do what we want to do anyway. And it worked. And I think when you get success on your own terms, then that's real success, and that has the possibility of lasting. If you get success like a lot of people do, but with doing something that sounds similar to what's current, they might have a hit record or two or three, and maybe last even 4 or 5 years, but they're not going to last long because they're followers and not leaders. And I think if you achieve success being a leader, then it's got that lasting value.
Been made.
That's Deep Purple with Bodyline, reminding anyone with ears that this band can swing for the bleachers with the best of them. While the London Fleet Street music writers always gave copious copy to Ritchie Blackmore's petulant child tantrums, anybody who actually understands rock history realizes that it's original organ player John Lord of Deep Purple, whose distinctive sound elevated the band to being not just popular, but influential, a game changer in the evolution of hard rock. John Lord left Deep Purple in 2002 and battled pancreatic cancer. Here's Roger Glover.
You know, John Lord was a big presence on the album because he died when we were making it in Nashville. John was, of course, a great musician and a huge part of this band. But above everything else, he was a great friend. And so it's difficult to lose a friend. And the news kind of knocked us sideways for a couple of days. We didn't do a lot of work. And after that, he was in our thoughts all the time. And there are a couple of songs about John on the album. That song, Steve came in with the idea, and it's, to me, is one of my favorite tracks because it's so dense, that structure that the organ and guitar play. I can't think of anyone else that would come up with anything like that or even play it. And then it goes into a song, which has nothing to do with what you just heard. The lyrics, John was in our thoughts, and that became all about John. And it's in a way, it's John singing to us. It's what John would sing to us.
Light up a candle.
To the sky.
Wow. File Deep Purple's Above and Beyond under Progressive Rock, right next to Genesis. Still to come, another musical tribute to the late original Deep Purple keyboardist John Lord, an uncommon man. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and more interviews at inthestudio.net.
Hi, this is Roger Glover of Deep Purple. I'd like to congratulate Redbeard In the Studio for an unbelievable 25 years of stories and tales and lies and honesty and truth behind the greatest rock albums in history.
Thank you so much, Roger. It is indeed an honor. In a musical forest of tall, sturdy oaks such as Deep Purple, it's hard to stand out. But guitar buffs are already singing the praises of Steve Morse's astounding performance on Deep Purple's new album, Now What? Here's his guitar mate, Roger Glover, with me in the studio.
Steve has a wonderful ear. He can pick up on things that I can't hear. And, for example, there's a part in where he and John used to do it, now he and Don does it, where someone will start playing and the other person will join in and they won't know where the other person's going to go. It goes to places where you just didn't expect. And it's live, it's in front of an audience, so it's risky. But somehow Steve has the ability to hear where Don's playing and going towards and gets there ahead of him, and sometimes he'll play a note that will influence where Don's going to go for the next chord. It's a wonderful moment in the show, and Bob Ezrin picked up on that, and we tried it in the studio. The tape started rolling. Well, it wasn't tape, of course. Those are the days. But he said, okay, go. And Steve started playing something, and Don joined in, and it's just, it was one take, it was live, and it's the intro to Uncommon Man. And that's when you hear them influencing each other. It's just stunning, and it takes an amazing ear and, of course, a phenomenal ability with your fingers. And Steve has both those, and so does Don. Don's an amazing musician in his own right. just playing around with that horn part. And he was doing it all in fifths, with bare fifths, so there's no chords, really. And it's a bit like, you know, Fanfare for a Common Man by Aaron Copland. That's fifths, and it's a very, you know, distinctive piece of music. And when Don came up with this, you know, what's the working title for this? He said, Fanfare for an Uncommon Man, as a joke, you know. So he got known as Uncommon Man anyway. Because of the regal atmosphere in it, it had to be kind of majestic. And I can think of nothing more majestic than seeing John Lord standing behind his Hammond, almost like a bust of himself, a commanding figure. And it's good to be king, it's good to be him. It's good to be on top of your game, which is what he was.
Hail Caesar and Deep Purple. The cinematic, majestic, uncommon man. It's Good to Be King from Deep Purple's new album, Now What? After all these years and literally a million miles together, lead singer Ian Gillan and Roger Glover obviously came up with the strongest batch of songs since possibly Machine Head. Again, Roger Glover of Deep Purple.
We all throw in different things. When Ian and I work together, it's like a brainstorming session. And, you know, you hear tunes in your head. You can hear the track in, the backing track, and you can hear things in your head. And so all you got to do is just say them out loud. And we have a very good relationship, Ian and I, especially on this album. It was great working with him. We were relaxed and yet very focused, very intense. Strangely enough, I used Bob's precision bass on quite a few tracks. And so I was playing with fingers, which is something I don't normally do. I'm a pick player. And to my surprise, when I heard the mixes, I mean, I'm mixed way up loud. I think if I was mixing it, I wouldn't have been that bold.
Traveled in it fast, be Lord knows where I might have been.
put my faith in the axle, not the wheels, sings Deep Purple lead singer Ian Gillan on the tasty groove of All the Time in the World on Deep Purple's new album, Now What? Here's bass player Roger Glover.
And where the lyrics came from, I don't know. We wrote a couple of different sets of lyrics for it before we found what it should be. And that the chorus is mine, thanks very much. And sometimes when you're playing something for the first time, you don't quite know how to play it, so you play it fairly straight, certainly as a bass part. And I remember Don saying to me, I said, maybe the bass part's a bit straight there. He said, why do you like The Band so much? You know, Bob Dylan's band, The Band. And I said, oh, I love them. He said, yeah, but what you're hearing is them just after they'd written it. So it's all very, very simple. You know, you listen to the bass part, it's not a complicated thing, but it's just right for the song. And that's what I always try for in the bass part. It's got to support the song.
And to prove just how deep and wide the Now What creative well became, a really catchy song with layers of rich guitar tones appears near the end. Again, Deep Purple's Roger Glover.
When I recorded, I record our kind of writing sessions on a little digital handheld. And when we've got the sort of rough arrangement right, I'll record it and say, right, anyone got a working title? And Don yelled out, yeah, Vincent Price. And I looked sideways at him and said, okay, it's Vincent Price, you know, knowing full well that we're going to change it when we do it properly. And, but of course, we didn't change it because it's a great title. And I met Vincent Price. He worked with me on Butterfly Wall. A lovely, lovely man he was. But his overriding image comes from Hammer films in the 60s, where every Hammer film was Dracula, Frankenstein, blood, gore, vampires, you know, over-the-top horror movies. Vincent Price, so we had this very cinematic kind of sounding track. And we thought, well, what would it be like to have, if you were a producer or if you were a director of a movie and you were going to do a Hammer film, you'd want the formula for everything you'd need. And so we just wrote down a list of all the things we'd need to make a Hammer film. And there it is.
song certain to make Queensryche or Ozzy Osbourne envious, that's Deep Purple with Vincent Price on Now What? With a slew of rock autobiographies coming out, I asked Deep Purple bass player Roger Glover if he's been considering possibly writing a book.
Yeah, I've been toying with the book for actually several years. It's a lot more work than, well, I knew it was going to be a lot of work. But I'm persevering with it and gradually getting forward. I don't know how much, you know, you travel. It's in a way you take it for granted. I try not to do that. Occasionally you'll have breakfast in Sydney, lunch in Singapore, and, you know, dinner in Lisbon. It is a bit weird. But and the more I see of the world, the more I see people are the same. Certainly the people that come to see our shows, they come for exactly the same reason all around the world. And that's to me, that's humanity. That's great. Most of the trouble spots, I remember being in Bangkok when the riots were going on. And we were in a hotel and we were looking at the city from the, you know, top floor of the hotel. You couldn't see anything. But on the television, all you saw was burning vehicles and police and people, you know, going nuts. And we're looking around the skyline and maybe it's over there somewhere. So you kind of get a skewed vision of the world if all you see is the bad news. There's a lot of good news, but good news doesn't sell and good news isn't interesting. But there's lots of good news around. Sometimes you've got to search for it. But, you know, as I said in one song I wrote a few years ago, the less that you look for, the more you find.
This is Red Beauty in the Studio, thanking my guest, Roger Glover of Deep Purple. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly, Red Beard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2013, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet, theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Red Beard Rocks on Twitter, and hear much more from the biggest names in rock at inthestudio.net.